You know, sometimes your mind doesn't focus sharply on things that are important. But then things happen, and all of a sudden your focus is like a laser. And so I feel certain that the reason that God created me was to serve and to help. And I really feel like that's when I'm in my very best element, is when I'm doing what is right. And I can tell you this, it is right for me to be here this morning, but it's also, I serve you at your mercy. And I want to be a good servant to you today, and I want to give you encouraging, helpful information. And so if I can this morning, this program is called Health Essentials, by the way, if you haven't heard it before. Maybe you're driving down the road or you're new to the area and you haven't tuned in. But I can tell you what you need in your life. You need the truth. You need real encouragement, and you need hope. I don't know how many people listening to me right now are just in complete despair when it comes to their health. And they have tried everything that has been recommended and they have availed themselves to, but they still don't have answers. Well, I want to tell you today, there is hope for you. You can turn this around with God's help. If God is for us, who can be against us? And so thanks for joining in today, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule. I'm sure some people are sitting at the breakfast table having a cup of coffee, or they're eating breakfast. And there may be some people that are just now waking up and they want to tune in. You know, one thing that I thought was kind of funny, and I just rarely ever do this. I couldn't tell you the last time that I've been to Dillard's before. But yesterday I went to Dillard's and Tyler in the evening, because if you saw the shoes that I've been wearing, you're probably going to say, "Hey, Dr. Morgan, those are just a little bit worn out, buddy." And I would not disagree with you. But, you know, sometimes you just get busy in life. So I decided I would go to Dillard's, but I found a pair of shoes on sale. And as I was talking to the shoe salesman, this woman walks past me. She says, "You're Dr. Morgan, aren't you?" I'm going, "Yeah." She said, "I just have a million questions for you." I said, "Well, ask them now, and I'll cover them tomorrow morning on the radio." And in some ways, that would have been a tremendous blessing for her to give me a topic to talk about, because I'd rather focus on what's important to other people. But believe me, I have plenty of health topics that I'm interested in. But yes, it is true, I am completely biased. Oh, by the way, the lady told me, she said, "You're shopping, I'm not going to ask you questions when you're, you know, trying to find a pair of shoes." I mean, isn't that just really sweet and kind of her? I mean, that was just spectacular. That really, really made my day. Actually, I haven't even given out the phone number of the station. It's 903-586-5257, but somebody wants to talk, so let's go to that. All right, good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I'm so glad I got through.
Oh, you're the first one. Way to go.
Yay, and how are you?
I am good. Thanks for your phone call. How can I help you?
Yes, sir. My niece has vitiligo. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You are. Mm-hmm.
Okay. She has vitiligo, and it started with just one spot by her eye, and now she has three additional spots, and she's just very depressed, and the doctors told her that she has more spots now because of stress, and I just wanted to see, you know, get your perspective on it and what we could get for her.
All right. Well, let me give you just a short overview for those that don't know. I think the number one autoimmune disease of the skin in the United States would be psoriasis. And that's going to be closely followed by eczema. And so these numbers that I'm going to be quoting, they're probably 5 years old, so it's probably gone up a little bit since then. But I think there's about 7.5 million cases of psoriasis. And if I'm not mistaken, there's probably about almost 7.4 million cases of eczema. How they get these numbers, I don't know, but I'm guessing they're normal. But vitiligo, I think that's number three, and there's probably like about just a hair under 7 million cases in the United States. So you and I would agree, this is fairly common.
Okay, yeah.
This is an autoimmune disease where the body's own immune system begins mm-hmm. to attack those cells in the skin that produce melanin, or the pigment that gives, you know, your niece this beautiful olive skin. And so once those cells have been killed by the immune system, they can no longer produce the melanin or the pigment. Let me give you a different take on this, all right? All right. Mm-hmm. And again, I just want to make this sound simple, so if I don't say anything that you want to hear, tell me to back up and start over, and I'll be glad to.
Okay.
So, in the first place, this is not one of those deadly diseases. It's not like an autoimmune disease where you have meningitis and you die or your lungs shut down. So that's the good news. So I want to say this is more of a mild case, but there's three things that I'm always looking at when it comes to vitiligo. And again, okay. I'm just going to try to make it simple. Number one, what is triggering the immune system? Or maybe another way of saying is, what is a person's thorn in the flesh that definitely contributes to this? And so I'm just telling you from what I've seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, that if a person has vitiligo, at the very least, we've got to figure out what their weakness is. And so I'm going to give you one or two suggestions real quick. Number one, every case of the hundreds of cases that I've taken care of over the years, they always have a trigger. And that trigger is usually a food that they are eating, that if they eat that food, it just causes this wicked chain of events where the immune system sort of goes bonkers. Now, I'm not saying that you and I have to, you know, logically understand that, but I'm telling you, it is what it is. And so, from my perspective, the top three foods that I see as a definite trigger is, I'm going to say 80% of the time, they have a wicked reaction to wheat, whether they recognize it or not. But when they
have a wicked reaction to what?
To wheat, you know, like bread.
Okay, yes, sir.
Like if you took like a flour and you knead it and add yeast to it, I'm talking bread.
Yes, sir.
And this comes in every shape, form, and fashion. It could be noodles or pasta or crackers or chips that contain wheat, and you know, some of the corn chips, they actually contain more wheat than they do corn, which I think is bizarre. But it could be any of those. It could be like a cookie or a muffin. And so that is the one thing that I have to focus on when I take care of anybody with an autoimmune reaction. We have got to identify what is the substance that they're consuming that is just working against them. And I know that's too simple, but that's the way it is now. Let's go on to number two right there. But that can be solved easily, and that can be figured out. I mean, that's basically what I do every single day of the week, all day long. That is my singular focus. And so when I examine somebody, I'm kind of asking the question, all right, is there anything that is interfering with them from healing? And I'm not saying I'm perfect at this, but I think I'm pretty good at it. So, and when a person comes to me and they go, oh, my goodness, I had no idea, or you know what happens 90% of the time? They go, Dr. Morgan, you're not going to believe this, but I have been so suspicious for so long that corn was my problem. Let me tell you what happened. The moment I cut corn out is when all my fortunes started changing for the better. So you know what? I'm an easy sell. I pretty much believe everything that everybody tells me. I may be a little bit gullible, but I believe every word that comes out of my patient's mouth. Why would I doubt them? Now, number two, and this is just quoting research, and I think it's very, very factual. The number one predictor on who's going to develop vitiligo, it's just one factor. It's the amount of stress that they have in their life. Now, I'm just like you. Do you know what I want in my life? I want peace.
And I
want harmony. I don't want to continually strive against myself. And so there is a stress issue. And so I know I'm really talking about the same topic that I start off with. So if I suggest that either dairy products or corn or wheat, and I've seen a few cases where it was just tomatoes or potatoes or bell peppers or something like that. But I've seen. But if a person has stress going on internally and they feel uneasy and they feel anxious and they feel stressed and they don't sleep well and they just generally don't feel as good as they'd like to feel. So this, don't overthink this. You just got to go back at a time when you felt really, really good and you go, you know what? All is well. I can't wait to go and worship the Lord tomorrow. And I can't wait to do this. And I can't wait to bless others. Now, I know this is ridiculous, but I've already written my morning list of what I want to accomplish today. And Would you care to guess how many things I have on my list? I have exactly 12 things. Now, I don't know if I can do all those, and this is very, very ambitious, but I'm going to set out to do it.
Mm-hmm. Of course, awesome.
And you know what? If I fail, so what? I can I can pick it up on Monday, and I can try to go to the... But anyway, and to make a long story short, she's got excessive stress. And so one of the things that I always, always look at, and this is just a common recurring theme over and over again, so I know I sound like a broken record, but when I examine somebody, I always look for as many clues as possible to what is not working right. So I think that I know what I'm doing when I show up to work on Monday morning. But one of the things that I do is I look for the weakness that the person has. And so if they bring in all their lab work and all their blood work and they bring in all their tests and CAT scans and MRIs and X-rays, I'm not the least bit concerned about everything that's perfect. And that's a blessing because I can say, hey, all this is great. Let's get off this. But when I see three markers in a row that, point toward maybe there's a serious, serious issue with the kidneys or the liver or the blood or the lungs or the heart, well, do you think I should probably focus on that? Of course. And so I always play toward a person's weakness. But with vitiligo, they always, always, always have adrenal glands. And this is my opinion. Anybody can question or argue if they like. I always find they have this excessive production of cortisol and adrenaline. And if you don't think this is real, well, I think that you're going to agree with me. When you have too much cortisol that's being secreted, like an overproduction of it, you're constantly going to feel uneasy and not as happy as you normally do.
Because there's
a battle going on in the body, so I have got to target the adrenal glands. If I don't do something to kind of help them, and you realize I'm not a counselor.
I'm not.
If you heard the program that was on the radio before I came on, I just was, I know I should have been spending all my time preparing for the program, but I found myself just so intrigued what they were talking about with relationships that I was probably scribbling down notes. You want to hear my notes now? And so, but the other thing that I want to think of is, what do we do to help the situation? And so let me give you some suggestions, and I'm trying to think of the name of it, and I think I have it, but I need to write it down.
Okay.
Oh man, I'm gonna butcher this right here. Do you know if you said I'm gonna take a train to the Orient? Well, you know what that means right there, don't you? The Orient. But I want to say I want to say the name of the herb is Orient planus, like P-L-A-N-U-S. Did I spell that right? Planus.
Yeah, I guess. Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, you're just gonna, okay. If I butchered it, you call my office, and what I'll do is I'll make it right. But so, can I just give you my very best guess from memory?
Please,
And of course, what if my mind is tricking me? What if it's not this? But it's either oriental planus or orientalis planus. But I want to say it's oriental planus.
Okay.
Now, this is an herb, and the way that it's presented, it's called gemotherapy. And I'll let you kind of look up gemotherapy. It's just like G-M-M-O and then the word therapy. So, you know, just phonically sound it out and spell it. But it's called gemotherapy. But this is called stem cell therapy. But these, you've heard of stem cells they extract from unborn babies, which I think is just morally reprehensible. I'm not hiding behind that. I think it's just the most wicked, vile, evil thing of all time. But this is stem cell therapy that's going to come from baby plants.
Okay.
And are you okay with what I'm telling you? If I'm walking in the woods with the kids, and they see these cute little adorable little huckleberries on a huckleberry tree, I don't have any problem eating them, and neither do they, because I think that God has given us all these things to help us and to benefit and to improve. But I'm going to be very firm about this. There is no healing on any level with drugs for vitiligo. But with understanding what your weaknesses are and correcting those weaknesses, that's where healing takes place. Now,
in other words, there's no correcting the skin.
No, that's not what I'm trying to say, because I've seen many cases correct, but I'm going to be just real blunt with you on this. We got a narrow window of opportunity to turn it around. It's very narrow, and I don't want to say exactly, but can I give you just a guess?
Yes, sir.
And either what I'm going to say is going to encourage you, or it's going to discourage your knees. So I'm real sorry about that, but I think I've got 18 months to turn it around. And if it goes beyond 18 months, I just think the immune system has caused too much damage, and there's no rejuvenating those cells that produce the pigment that gives the skin the nice color and the tone. You know, like if I were to go out in the sunlight today, well, probably not today. I'm not going to go out in the sunbathe in the backyard today because it's going to be, what, 40-something degrees with wind.
Right.
I mean, I guess I could do that. It just might be a little bit difficult. But you've got 18 months, and so there is plenty of other research that talks about the relationship of essential fatty acids and the relationship of what I'm going to call, there is a, and actually this is probably what I really wanted to begin with, but can I give you just one more point?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I know I'm laying it on thick here, so forgive me, but the biggest...
No, just go ahead. I'm
oh, thank you. You are so generous and kind to me. The largest gland of the immune system is called the thymus gland.
Yes.
And I'm just going to tell you right now, this regulates everything that goes on in the body. It is it. I think it was about 3 or 4 months ago, I read that story, that study from Russia, where they gave people, elderly people that were 75 and above, they gave them thymus extract. And you're going to think I'm making this up. So if you think, that's fine. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But they lived 7 years longer than anybody else when they were taking the thymus extract. How can that be? You would be nuts not to at least consider what I'm saying. How's this for a great program? I've already called my first caller nuts if she doesn't listen to me. I didn't mean it in a bad way. It's just kind of a figure of speech. But the thymus, here's the problem. Your thymus gland is where all the white blood cells that come from your bone marrow, they have to go to the thymus gland in order to learn what the role is. Just like a young Marine, he's got to make it through boot camp, and then he goes on to additional schooling, whatever that is. Maybe it's artillery, or maybe it's infantry or Marine recon, or maybe demolition. Or I mean, I don't even know everything they do, but I'm just kind of making this stuff up. But see, the thymus gland, it has the greatest influence over what your white blood cells do. And so there are two cells that are very well studied that the thymus gland produces. One of them is called a T helper cell. And
okay.
Even if you've never heard, the T is just short for thymus. So anytime that you see the word T cell, you think thymus. And so you have T suppressor cells and you have T helper cells. And so with vitiligo, it's been any and every other autoimmune disease known to man.
Okay.
It's been shown that there are not enough T suppressor cells. And what T suppressor cells do for your lovely niece is they tell the body, would you please quit attacking the cells in the skin that produce pigment? So she's got a problem in her thymus gland. It's just nobody's been able to point that out. But I'm going to promise you, she has 100% problem with her adrenal glands. She's 100% problem with her thymus. She's got a hidden food allergy, and she's got too much stress. And so what I'm going to do is, I'm just going to say it real, real basically. Without T suppressor cells, you've got no way to tell the immune system to, hey, stop it. Cut it out. Stop attacking us. Now, I need to add one more point to this. Back in the early 1970s, they discovered a chemical that has never been discovered before, and it's found richly throughout the brain in some people. It's called endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard the term a runner's high?
A runner's high?
Yeah, it's called a runner's high. Just think of somebody that jogs for 6 or 7 miles or 15 miles, and they feel this tremendous wave of euphoria coming over their body. And they just feel good, so they go, oh, my goodness, I have got to exercise today because it makes me feel so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know what's responsible for that? Is endorphins. And so if you have your favorite dog who's a labradoodle, and you want to stroke and pet, and you go, oh, my goodness, this just calms me. It makes me feel good.
Right.
That's endorphins. That you're training the body to release endorphins. Or mm-hmm. when you get a wonderful hug from your husband and you hold hands and he kisses you and you really, really like it, that's endorphins that are being released. But endorphins, oh, let me just tell you, sister, this is what rules the immune system. You want the immune system to work good? It is completely nourished and fed on every level mm-hmm. by endorphins. And let me give you one example. I was reading the other day about a story about a woman. I know this is just not a great story, but the ending is good.
Okay.
But she has this horrible, horrible case of cancer. I'm not going to tell you what type of cancer it is, but I'm just going to say the mm-hmm. cancer had spread from its primary location to other organs and parts of the body. And that's called metastatic, and I'm sure you've heard this, but when it comes to metastatic cancer, it just doesn't have a good... it just doesn't seem to respond real well. So I'm not saying that this more to cause anyone's emotions to get lower. I really want to lift you up. But this woman that had this horrible cancer, this is, and I'm just repeating what I read about it, so take it any way you like. The doctors told her, this is very dire. It's spread all over your body. I really don't know if it's spread all over the body. I'm just repeating it. But they said, we have got to start chemotherapy today. And mm-hmm. we need to start radiation treatments, and then maybe we can surgically go into about four or five locations and try to cut it out after we've given you chemicals and we burned it with radiation. And I'm not going to tell anybody else how to think about this, but I know how I feel about this. But mm-hmm. to me, this was like a tremendous story. And the woman turned to the oncologist and she said, no, I'm not going to do that. Because she asked him a question. She said, how long will I live with the chemo and the radiation?
Nice.
And he said, maybe 3 to 4 months at the most. And that was just his opinion, so I respect that. That's his expertise.
Right.
And she said, no. And you know what she chose to do?
What?
She said, you know what? I have not lived my life the way that I should. And there's one thing that I've always wanted to do. And this is what she said. She said, I want to start taking pictures of birds, and I've always, always in my heart wanted to learn how to paint pictures from nature. And personally, I think that's beautiful because God is the creator of all these things.
Right.
And let me tell you what happened to her. All of a sudden, she let everything go. She let it all go. She didn't try any longer to fight against this. She just let it go, and it didn't say this, but I'm just kind of thinking that maybe she just said, I'm going to turn everything over to God and put in His hands. Now, it never said that, so I know I'm kind of reading into that, but that's just the way that I think, and it's not like I can interview her, but all of a sudden, her immune system began to respond much differently than it had before. And so when I tell you that endorphins are these wonderful elixirs of life, you've got to have endorphins to get your body to heal, to be in a happy place, to have good sleep, to feel good, to be productive. And so all she did was she started doing everything that made her happy. Now, somebody might call that selfishness, but you know what? I don't have any other details of the story than what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, her cancer disappeared and went away. I mean, over time. I don't want you to think it's one day, because I don't think that's the way it was.
No,
but she was completely free from this metastatic cancer. So when I tell you that in order to get the immune system to do its job, you got to have endorphins. And how do you get endorphins? Well, if you make a decision to take care of yourself and you start exercising because you realize that you've got to start exercising, then you're producing endorphins. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. Have you ever flown on an airplane before?
Yes, sir.
What is the first thing the steward or the stewardess tells you? They say, if there's an emergency and we lose cabin pressure and the oxygen mask pops out and you've got two small children right beside you, what does she tell you to do? She says, you have got to put it on yourself first. Oh, yes. But what do you think that means? That means you have got to take care of yourself first before you can meet the needs of others. How good is that going to go if you panic and you fumble around and you do everything but putting your mask on first.
Right.
You have got to live and take care of yourself. And right. You don't even know how desperately I want this case to turn around, because I want her to be blessed. And I certainly don't want to fail you. But you've got to put on, she's got to put on the oxygen mask. And that means she's got to be honest and look at herself in the mirror and say, am I on the path that I need to be on, or do I need to change paths? And I'm gonna be perfectly honest with you. There's not a lot of people that can help a situation like this, because they really don't know what to do, and they don't really have a plan other than drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not telling you what road to go on. I'm just saying, I choose life, and I choose rejuvenation, and I choose healing, and I would rather spend every ounce of my energy blessing your adorable, beautiful, beautiful niece than spending our energy on something. But we've got to repair how her adrenals work, and we've got to repair her gut, and we've got to repair her skin. And yes, there's a whole bunch of things I didn't tell you, because it'd probably be like, it'd be another 3 hours on top of the program, but I've given you a starting point. But we've got to get her endorphins up, and you do that through living and loving others. And when you unselfishly can give yourself to somebody else as an act of kindness or generosity, you're helping endorphins be released. And I really hate to say what I'm about to say, but I feel like I should be honest. And you're probably going to be very, very upset by what I'm going to say, but eating dark chocolate has been shown to improve endorphins. Is it now? Did I just offend you by saying that?
Not at all.
And I think also, one of the exciting essential oils. Now, you don't know this, but I have completely failed every time I have taken lavender seeds, and I've tried to raise up baby plants. I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but I'm doing something wrong. And I'm sure somebody knows, but I have never been able to grow lavender from seed, and I have tried a whole bunch of times. So I need to retool them back up, but I just love lavender. But if she were to put a drop of lavender oil, just one drop, I didn't say she needs to dip in a barrel of lavender oil, but lavender oil is an aid. So everything I'm telling you is a little piece of the puzzle, and I just think that if we get enough pieces right, we can start to turn this around where she can have the health of her dreams. Because you know how this works? When she feels good and I feel good and you feel good, every aspect of your life is going to be better. Now, I know also, the moment that you profess to be a Christian or profess to obey the gospel, you're going to be attacked by Satan. And I'm telling you, you know what I read the other day in the Bible? It says that Satan can disguise himself as an angel of light. Well, what does that tell you? That tells you he is very, very clever in how he can lie to people and how he can deceive people and how he can get them to believe total, total lies. And so we've got to get Satan out of the way, and we've got to find a way to reverse all this. So anything I can do to help.
And you said a drop of lavender oil, you mean in her bath?
Well, that's one way of doing it. But you know what I think? When she takes either a bath or she takes a hot shower, I think let's strike while the iron's hot and maybe just rub a drop on her foot, or maybe a half a drop on one foot and a half on the other, and just rub it in. And see, a long time ago, my clinic director, his name was Dr. Robert Fivecoat. Have you ever heard me talk about Dr. Fivecoat?
I don't think so.
Well, can I mention him just very briefly?
Yes, sir.
See, when I went from the classroom to the clinical setting in the hospital, my clinic supervisor, his name was Dr. Robert Fivecoat, and let me describe him to you. He had very white hair. He was very, very short, and I'm going to say 5'2". If I've missed it, it's not by more than a half of an inch, okay? And he had this thick, broad shoulders and barrel chest. And when he wore his lab coat, you know how lab coats kind of go down to these white lab jackets that you might see a physician wear? They're supposed to go down kind of about to the knees, maybe.
Right.
Well, his was not at the knees. It was like at the ankles. And so it's just one of those things that when you look at it, you go, oh, that's a little bit different. But he had very, very thick Coke bottle-like glasses because of maybe some type of visual impairment. So And you know what? I heard all the other physicians in the they didn't really care for Dr. Five Coat because they thought he was an old fuddy duddy. But I've failed to mention one point. He was 93. But I'm going to tell you, you know what? He pulled me to the side because he took an interest in me.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And he changed my life. And he's helped. He's played a role. I don't know if he was a believer, but I know this. He had nothing but a great influence. And in a roundabout way, some of my attitudes were wrong, and he helped shape them into what was right. But this is what he used to say to me. He said, Roy, there's got to be a simple way to fix this or something real easy, because I would go to him when I was just stuck and I couldn't figure it out. And I hate to admit this, but it's true. Over and over again, the guy could just work magic. I don't mean magic like weird stuff. I'm just saying, I'm going, oh, my goodness, you mean it's that easy? And so here's what he used to say to me, because he pulled me aside. I don't know if he pulled me aside more than anybody else, but he may have pulled me aside more than anybody else for maybe a little bit of discipline, but I needed that, right? And
right.
This is what he used to say to me. He'd say, Roy, he said, I want you to know something, son. Because he kind of treated me like I was his son. He said, I know. I just could almost cry thinking about him. But you know what? That was 1988. And, you know, if he was 93, that would be, he would be 100 and a what now? You know, 23, so I'm certain that he has passed on, but I'm thankful to God for his influence. But these are the things he used to say to me, and this is just one of them. I'm not going to tell them all. He said, Roy, you got to remember, son, the three universal healers are time, patience, and consistency. Now, you tell me, is that a beautiful statement or not? And so I'm going to leave you with that, but I'm telling you right now, I am rooting for you. Anything that I can do to be an encouragement to you, you call me here at the radio station anytime you need, and I'll be glad to help.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome. Have a good day, ma'am.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, if you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257 or 5257. I'll be glad to take your phone call. If no one calls, oh, boy, I've got a full plate here of what I want to share with you. So what I'm going to do, since I'm not having any phone calls, I want to read this to you for your consideration. And so here goes. And all I want you to do is just consider this, and I need you to decide if this is the truth or if it's not the truth. Well, where am I getting this from? Okay. It comes from the year 2010, and it comes from a journal called the Scandinavian Journal of Primary Health. It says it's volume 28, pages 121 through 127, in case you want to look it up. But the Scandinavian Journal of Primary Healthcare, they go on to say, they have found that the general health status of seniors with high cholesterol far exceeds that of their counterparts having low cholesterol. Now, I don't know if you caught that, so let me just suggest. They're saying overall, when cholesterol is higher, these people are so much healthier as opposed to when cholesterol is lower. The study population consisted of 490 seniors who lived on their own or with relatives. That is who is in this group. And every marker of health, excuse me, I had to call. And every marker of health and morbidity measured, mortality, strokes, myocardial infarction, that's a fancy word for a heart attack, infectious disease, that's going to be pneumonia and sinus infections and diverticulitis and everything else that's an infection. They also measured dementia. I don't know if you know this, folks, but dementia is a real, real, real problem. And I'm honestly telling you, it is getting worse with no end in sight, and it just breaks my heart. And so it says, they go on to say, from every marker of health and morbidity, they looked at mortality, the number of strokes, heart attacks, the number of infections, and dementia. So that was their categories or their criteria. the seniors with the highest cholesterol levels, they fared far, far better than those with the low. Nevertheless, the study's authors concluded that it was not possible to make any conclusions about the health and harms of lipid lowering in the elderly, claiming that the scientific evidence strongly supports lipid lowering for primary and secondary prevention of coronary heart disease. So they're saying even though that they found all this to be true, they still think that you need to be on cholesterol-lowering drugs. I mean, folks, doesn't that go to show you that old paradigms die hard? Oh, my word, do they die hard. All right. That's the first one I want to share with you. I have another one that I want to share with you. Now, just because I'm really excited about this, I realize this is not relevant to everyone. But you know what? It is really relevant to a lot of people. And if it's not you, I bet you know somebody this is relevant to. So here goes also. This is the second article for your consideration. And here's the title of the article, and then this is just the abstract. The title is High Fat Reverses Kidney Failure. So this too is for your consideration. So just weigh it out in your mind and your heart. I don't care if you use a little bit of emotions and logic. That's the way people roll anyway. Here goes. The tragic epidemic of kidney failure. It is so common in diabetics, it puts a huge burden on our healthcare system. By some estimates, this accounts for half of all medical costs. Now, I don't know if I can really comprehend that, and I don't know if you can comprehend that, but did you just hear what the article said? It said half of all medical costs are kidney failure. So you can't tell me this is not real. And just because you're not in kidney failure yet or you don't know anybody that is, that doesn't make it not so. It's a real deal. All right. The author of the study goes on to say, they ask a question. What if a simple diet could reverse kidney failure? Well, listen to this and tell me if this doesn't blow your socks off. A recent study on mice indicates there is a possibility. And I realize human beings aren't mice, but mice are mammals, and they have kidneys like we do. And you've got to have your kidneys to filter all the toxic waste from your blood. And if they don't do that, guess what happens? Your blood's going to become dirty. And it's going to have a really poisonous effect on all your organs. You can't outlive your kidneys, friend. Here's the study. Researchers at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York, they used mice with both type 1 and type 2 diabetes. I hope you can listen to what I'm saying here because I think this is important. Once kidney damage had developed, I don't think you understand that. Let me just say that again. They had type 1, type 2 diabetes. It is inevitable the kidneys will be destroyed as a consequence of the diabetes. So I know this is not what the study's saying, but I'm begging you. We got to find a way to reverse the kidney damage, and we got to find a way to reverse the diabetes. That's all doable, my friend. I see it every single day in the office. So researchers at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York, they used mice with both type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Once kidney damage had developed, half the mice were put on a ketogenic diet, low in carbohydrates and very high in fat. After 8 weeks, the researchers noted that the kidney damage was reversed in those on the high-fat diet. Such exciting results should be shouted to the skies, but health officials are administering a large dose of cold water. This research was carried out in mice, so it is difficult to see how the results would translate into any real benefits for people with diabetes at this stage, says Dr. Ian Frame, who is the Director of Research at Diabetes United Kingdom. And I quote, "It is too simple to say that kidney failure could be prevented by diet alone And it is also questionable whether the diet used in this model would be sustainable for humans, even in the short term. Now, I'll tell you a little secret I've learned. If someone is about to die and lose everything, they are all in, and they'll do these things. But yeah, if you're not convinced that you are in dire straits, yes, you may not be really all that motivated or all that into taking care of yourself. But you know, folks, this is the only body that you're going to get from God. This is it. You're not going to get another one. So this is real, right? How you take care of your body, that is completely up to you. You make all the decisions on your own. But don't lie to yourself. But I just think that is the greatest, that's just going to be one of the greatest studies I've read, and that's true. And I'm going to tell you, that's what I believe, and that's what I see day in and day out. So I'm pretty good about telling people, let's put it to the test and see what happens. It's as simple as that. It either works or it doesn't. But if it works, all of a sudden we've got their attention. Good morning. I bet you thought that I wasn't going to pick up the phone, right?
I sure did.
Well, but I did, though.
Yeah.
I totally caught you off guard. You never thought. Anyway, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I got a couple of questions. You were talking about endorphins a while ago. If you are on antidepressants, will that suppress your endorphins?
Let me say this a different way.
Okay.
There's more than just a chemical called endorphins that's produced within the brain and the pituitary gland. We also have what's called dopamine. And so when you have plenty of dopamine, I mean, you're going to be really a social person. You're going to feel like getting out there. You can't wait to visit with people. You want to bless people. I mean, generally, endorphin is a remarkable. But in order to have motivation and to be productive and to aim for goals and achieve them, you got to have dopamine to do that. Now let's go on to number two. There is a chemical produced by the brain called norepinephrine. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Uh-huh.
But I would say that about 90% of all antidepressant or anti-anxiety medications, they focus on norepinephrine and serotonin. But when you have plenty of norepinephrine, you just have a new confidence about yourself, like, you know what? I think I can do this, and it's not a big deal, and everything's going to go pretty well. But that's norepinephrine right there. It's just much easier to feel like everything's going to go well, because when there's a lack of norepinephrine, oh, baby, you got a black cloud over, and you feel like this is not going to turn out good. Now, let's go on to serotonin. You got another brain chemical called serotonin, but you know what I really want to tell you?
Uh-huh.
It's not produced in the brain.
Oh, okay.
It is not. It's produced in the gut. You have what's called the enteric nervous system. It exactly has the same number of nerve cells as what your brain has.
Yep.
It's the same exact way as your brain. Some people have cleverly called it the second brain. And so if you're taking antidepressants and you see some benefit from them, then you can bet your bottom dollar that your neurotransmitters like dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin, oxytocin, just to name a few, those are not working right. So I just like keeping it real simple. So if neurotransmitters are low, why don't we start taking steps to fix that? But to answer your first question, if you can do anything to get your endorphins to function at a higher level, you're going to win. But what I want to tell you is I think it takes maybe about a month and a half and 2 months to retrain the brain to get it back up to speed. So the greatest investment that you can get in right now is just starting on the course of improving yourself. But I realize this is scary because no one's asked you to do these things before, but it may take 2 months. And you may have to continually ask God to give you patience or help see you through. Well, at least that's what I believe in. Thanks for saying that. I took your comment as very, very encouraging and positive. But, yeah, and so, I sort of made a joke earlier with a woman on the phone that, you know, I hate to tell you, but dark chocolate's been shown to improve endorphins. So, is that a horrible recommendation for me to give you to eat a little bit of dark chocolate every day?
No.
So, do you feel like you really could make that sacrifice even though you don't want to?
Yeah.
Okay, the other thing
is...
For
the good of you, if it's for the better,
And so you can laugh at what I'm going to say or not, but do you ever think that if you go out to eat or you eat at home and you eat something that's really, really spicy, that somehow or another you feel better when you eat spicy foods? I'm gonna cut to the chase, because if you consistently eat spicier foods, has been definitely shown to greatly improve your body's production and release of endorphins.
Okay.
Remember what Hippocrates said, let thy food be thy medicine and let thy medicine be thy food.
Yeah.
So, and that helps. And another thing that really, really helps, and I probably will butcher this, but I want to take a stab at it. When you purposely set your mind that you want to participate in some type of greatly unselfish act to bless somebody else, you will generate greater neurotransmitters and greater endorphins. Let me tell you what this could look like. Every time you walk up to a store and you see a little old lady or a gentleman or just anybody, it could be a young lady or a child, and they're right behind you, when you smile at them, when you choose to smile at them, mm-hmm. and you want to hold the door open and you want to show difference and let them go in first, you have just trained your body to release oxytocin and norepinephrine. These are all love hormones. Mm-hmm. And so if you do this over and over again, now the other thing that I've shown, and now this is all secular research, so you take it with a grain of salt, but when somebody, they give up some of their time, let's just say it's 10 minutes, and they have gotten a revelation from God that they should send a thank you note, mm-hmm. or a card of appreciation, or a birthday card. But if you took a card, whatever that might look like, Hallmark or a cheap one at Walmart, which is probably where I usually... I have made many a homemade card, and I felt like this is good because I put my love into it. But anyway,
that's right.
And you know what? I'm not ashamed. I like crayons. I love crayons.
You
I
don't like have crayons. To.
if you saw my Bible right now, you'd say, "Do you just highlight everything with a crayon?" And I'd say, "Yep." But if you were to take time, if you tried this experiment every day for the next 10 days. If you were to write a card of either appreciation or a card of sympathy, if you express gratitude, if you express encouragement and love towards somebody else, then you've given up 10 minutes of your time. Yep. But I can tell you this, that's the sacrifice that will train your body to do this. Now, I'm not trying to make a big deal of this, but yesterday I got to the office about 7:45. And I don't know if you know about the weather yesterday, but the wind was whipping big time.
It was bitter cold.
Yes, but when I got to the office, there was a man in a pickup that wanted me.
Uh-huh.
And so he rolled down his window, and he was telling me that his wife had just died about 3 weeks ago.
Oh.
And I could tell real quick he wanted to tell me his story.
Uh-huh.
And so I had on just pants and a shirt and a very light jacket, and so for 15 minutes until my first patient walked in the door, I just kept going, Roy, you can make it, son, you can do it. But I, you know where it hit me though? It hit me on my legs. But the wind, my pants didn't do anything to protect me from the wind. And so when I got in the office, I thought, okay, Annie, you're going to have to give me maybe 10 minutes, and I just wore my jacket and I turned the heat up. But I'm telling you, but you know, he needed me, and I wanted to give him everything that he wanted.
You want to be there for him.
But at least it gave me a chance to say, I'm so sorry for your loss. But you know what else it did? And I really mean this from my heart, but it gave me a chance to express everything that I loved about his wife and everything that she meant to me. And I felt like that. Can I tell you what happened?
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Okay. He pulled up to me and he just said that he was just there. And before he could really say anything, I said, "Would you please tell your dear sweet wife that I said hello?" And that's when he said,
"Before you knew it."
Oh, but you know how I felt after that? I'm going to be great. And I said, "I'm so sorry. I didn't know." He says, "No, you don't need to ask for forgiveness. It's okay." But, yeah, and so to get endorphins up, if you consistently engage in exercise every day, you are helping generate endorphins. When you show acts of kindness and you touch other people And yes, when you eat very, very spicy foods, that has been shown to help. I know you think I'm making that up, but but dark chocolate also, and you know what? Endorphins are made from protein. So what would you guess that I might tell you next? Give your body protein.
Protein.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so this is all doable. But you could literally tell me that 2 months from now that you're a new man or whoever you're referring to, but you can tell me this is the best that you've done and you don't know why any physician hasn't explained this to you before.
Yeah.
So this is a little bit risky because the other thing that you can do is, why don't you just go online today and Google endorphins?
Yeah.
See what you've come up with. But I can tell you this, when you have endorphins, you feel great. But do you know what the number one symptom is of low endorphins?
Depression?
Well, I'm going to use a different term if I may. Uh-huh. You feel miserable on the inside.
Miserable or no energy or just
totally. But
drained.
And so I'm gonna refuse to use the word depression because I personally don't like it. But that's just my own deal. And so I'm not into labeling people. But I would never ever look you in the eye and say you're depressed, aren't you?
You're depressed.
I don't want to do that. I want to spend my energy somewhere else. But if I can, and I don't mean to be offensive. But if I tell you the truth is, when you have a lack of endorphins, you feel misery.
Miserable.
And and that's it. And so I don't need a lab test. I don't need anything else. All I need is a plan of action that restores your endorphins where I can say, how do you feel now? And you say, the black cloud is lifted. This is the best I've felt in a long time. And then I can rejoice and celebrate with you. And I can say, way to go, dude. Way to go.
That's right.
You know what? You're my hero. I want to be able to say you did it. You've got it. Way to go!
Yep.
You know what? In the real world, you have got to come to terms with whatever you're dealing with because unless you do that, there's no somebody's not going to change if they can't be honest.
No. Yeah.
So that's that.
Okay. And I got one more question. I have two, but I'm going to just give you one more. What do you recommend for sciatic nerves? My wife and I both have sciatic nerve problems.
What I would say is there's the reference book, and you can buy a used copy for maybe $2.17 off Amazon or eBay. The title of the book is called Core Performance. Core Performance.
What exercises?
Not only are there exercises, but they are what I'm going to call very corrective exercises, which means you've got a problem and she's got a problem, but no one has been able to pinpoint that you have tremendous muscular weakness and dysfunction. The muscles aren't working right, and thus the nerve is very inflamed because you have a host of other mechanical problems, but there's a failure in the musculoskeletal system and in the nervous system. And so You can do whatever you like, but my recommendation with the information I have, Core Performance by Mark Verstegen. And if you would at least take a leap of faith and get that and start practicing. Yeah. But you know what? I'm talking from somebody that's been there before.
Yeah.
Because in the year 1995, I had so much severe pain, and I had no relief or no remedy from all the recommendations that all my doctor friends suggested and all the treatments. Yep. But you know what? I'm not criticizing anybody because it was just one of those deals. You go through it and you find out this doesn't work and that doesn't work.
That's right.
But trial and error
thing.
Well, it is, and there's nothing wrong with that because, you know, you can learn a lot. But for me, that's what I did, and I'm just being real straight. It took about 4 weeks before I got the benefits. So I had to be faithful doing these things every day. And you know what I said to myself? This is awkward. This is difficult. This is not easy. But you know what? That should tell me something. That should tell me that I have a whole bunch of stuff in my body that's not working right. And the key to sciatica is restoring function. If you can restore everything to working like it was when you were a child or a teenager, then the problem is solved.
It's gone.
I tell you what, I've done more for you today than any other physician has. And I'm not saying that as a point of bragging. Because, you know, all right, I know I sound like a broken record, but I ask everybody, What did your physician recommend? Well, they recommended injections in my lower back, and they recommended that I come for more narcotics, and they want me taking fentanyl and opioids. And I'm thinking to myself, has that worked out? Hadn't in 17 years.
Nope.
Well, they've had their chance, and they've had their opportunity, but now we've got to come to a dose of reality, and we've got to get this turned around.
Yeah, do something different.
You don't even have to, if you get the book, maybe you can't read. Just imitate the pictures. That's kind of what I do.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I never have tried to deceive somebody and tell them I can read real well. I can look at pictures, though, and imitate
look at
that.
Pictures.
And that's what I did. And you know what? There were about 12 chapters, and I only did two of them. I didn't even get to the other ones, but I can tell you what. If you're willing to take a leap of faith and you're willing to risk trying doing this, you're going to find out real quick if your body's in good working order or if it's not, because when you try, for example, there's one highly corrective exercise when you're trying to fix major problems in your back and your hips and your knees and your legs and your shoulders. It's called a Turkish get-up. And I don't know if you've ever heard of that exercise called a Turkish get-up, but you can look on YouTube. And if you take a kettlebell and you start doing a Turkish get-up, I can tell you one thing, buddy. It's going to get your attention real quick, and it's going to tell you if your body's working right or if it's working wrong. But so do not be discouraged if you try a Turkish get-up, and then you go, oh, let's get a dose of reality. My back is not in such good working order. But I tell you what, every muscle group in your body has got to work to do a Turkish get-up.
Yeah.
And so I think I've given you some good information, and
okay.
I wish you the best.
Definitely.
Hey,
thank
man,
you.
you just go out and do these things.
Oh, I
and you report back to me and tell me this is the happiest that your wife has been a long time and the happiest that you have been.
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, I don't even know if there's time for another phone call, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to start sharing some information with you that I want to share with you. And this is about vaccines, and I realize this is a this is a hot topic. I don't want it to be a hot topic, but I believe in the truth. And so you have to tell me when you evaluate this, is this the truth or is this a lie? So I've only got just a smidgen of time left. So I'll tell you right now, I'm going to make a note, but if I don't really finish this today, which I won't be able to, I'll pick it up next week. And so... I hope that you can hear what I'm saying, and I mean no ill intent, but I realize I'm going to step on a whole bunch of toes because the topic is vaccines. A comprehensive survey initiated by the German site Impfschaden, I'm sure that's a German word, and its counterpart, vaccineinjury.info, all they're doing in the study is they're aiming to compare the health of vaccinated versus unvaccinated children. That's all they're doing, is they're making observations. So I just want to be honest with you. While the project is ongoing, over 7,500 surveys have been filled out so far. Do you think that's a small number, or do you think that's a decent number? Only 7,500 surveys. And said the preliminary results are published already. Folks, I'm just very sorry. I knew I didn't have enough time to get into it, but I'm going to make myself a note. This is going to be my lead topic next week. I have recorded this program last week. I tried to record the program. But if you start recording the program when you're 20 minutes into the program, that's not recording the program. So that's my boo-boo last week. I have really enjoyed everyone participating. Thank you so much for your help and encouragement. And you're listening to KBGS FM 90.3 Jacksonville, Tyre, Longview.